For weeks now, poor Dominic Mysterio has been stalked by this woman, this obsessed woman, Liv Morgan, has been torturing this young man now for weeks. And the 1 week that Dominic looks like he is finally about to fold to Liv Morgan is the week that Rhea Ripley makes her return to WWE. Unfortunately for Dominic, Rhea is back just in time for the road to SummerSlam. And that is not good news for Liv Morgan, because Liv Morgan, if you saw the look on her face at the end of Raw tonight, Liv Morgan is a dead woman walking. And she could, I mean, her feet could not carry her fast enough out of that arena at the end of the show. But now the stage is set. You know, we could get Rhea Ripley one-on-one with Liv Morgan at SummerSlam in a Dominic on a pole match. The objective is that the person who grabs Dominic first can use him as a weapon. And that will be the match for the women's world title at SummerSlam. You know, I'm not even sure if Rhea Ripley is medically cleared yet to actually have a match. We don't know that yet. All we know is that at the very end of the show tonight, Rhea Ripley walked out there in front of a crowd that was not overly lively tonight. They were not exactly reacting big to a lot of things on this show, but they reacted big to her because Rhea Ripley is a star. This woman is a star. If you're wondering who is the top woman in the WWE women's division right now on either show, it is Rhea Ripley. In terms of star power, in terms of how the fans view them, it's Rhea Ripley. And it's one of these situations where, you know, they took a negative, which was her getting hurt after WrestleMania, and they turned it into a positive. Because what has come out of this Rhea Ripley injury out of necessity was this Liv Morgan title run. And you can count on one hand the number of times Liv Morgan has even wrestled on television, let alone defended her title, since winning it, and still have probably three or four fingers left over. But despite that, she's been involved in this story, which has gained a lot of traction on social media. It has is really been quite the angle when it comes to, you know, the segments on the show where they have Dominic and Liv. There's so many of them in a given week, and that right there tells you the success of these segments and the success of the storyline so far. They would not be featured this often if it wasn't doing good numbers. So people are buying into it. People are tuning in for it. They want to see what's going to happen next. They want to see what's going to happen when Rhea comes back. Now she is. And now this gets to move on to the next phase. But I got to tell you, I'm in the camp of Dominic Mysterio here. I don't see what Dominic did that was so wrong. You know, Rhea Ripley was very angry with him at the end of the show tonight. And actually, they cut the show off again. They had that hard stop at 11 o'clock, and the show was not over yet. So there's already footage out there of what happened when the show actually ended. We'll talk about that. Not a lot happened, but there was one thing that happened. But anyway, so, you know, Dominic is, as I said before, he's on the show every single week, and he's telling this woman, leave me alone. I don't want to have anything to do with you. Leave. And every week she's showing up in the clubhouse, and she's playing video games, and she's putting her hands on him, and tonight she was stretching him. It's probably every man's dream, right, to be stretched by Liv Morgan. All of these horrible things, right, are happening to Dominic, the key card to the hotel room. And now he's going to get the blame for it. But what did he do that was so wrong? He's the victim here. You can't go blaming the victim now. I'm on Team Dom. He did nothing wrong. But I'm sure that's not how Rhea Ripley is going to take it. CM Punk and Seth Rollins had a little face-to-face confrontation on the show tonight. No Drew McIntyre, because he was suspended for calling Adam Pearce an incompetent bald bitch. So, well, he put his hands on him, too. That probably had more to do with it than anything else. He called him a bald bitch on Twitter earlier today. I laughed harder than I have in a while from a fucking tweet. Although these Rock memes, I gotta tell you, it's going to jump the shark real fast with me, but this Rock meme coming out of the WrestleMania documentary, there have been a few really good ones that have cracked me up. I think it'll have some staying power, but Punk and Rollins, though, were on the show tonight. They had a promo segment in the ring that was very good, and gave us a little insight, possibly, maybe, into where things might be headed at SummerSlam. We had another Wyatt 6 video as well with Bo Dallas / Uncle Howdy. We have a new trio that I will be talking about in the women's division. And contrary to what some people thought, coming out of Money in the Bank this past weekend, because there were people who thought, man, you know, Bron Breakker had a good thing going with Bron Breakker, and then he gets kicked in the face by Sami Zayn and he gets pinned. You know, why would Triple H do such a thing? Why would they cool off Bron Breakker? As I said, the only people who need to cool off are the ones who are looking at what they did on Saturday as some sort of damaging booking decision for Bron Breakker. It took 2 days, and Bron Breakker is exactly where he needs to be. All the people who worried about it, that he was going to be weakened by his loss to Sami Zayn, you were shown the way tonight. There's a method to the madness here. Another good episode of Raw. Maybe not as good as some of the last few weeks, but still, I thought a good episode overall. Coming out of Money in the Bank, we are going to go through the entire show. This is your Monday Night Raw review. It is July 8th, 2024. I am the Solid Monster. Let's get into the details here for this Raw show tonight, because after a recap of Drew McIntyre trying to cash in Money in the Bank, and then cashing in Money in the Bank, but doing so unsuccessfully for the World Heavyweight title, he was screwed over once again by CM Punk. Stop me if you've heard this before. CM Punk was there live to open the show and kick things off tonight. The first thing that CM Punk wanted to do on this show was to congratulate John Cena on his retirement in 2025. John Cena at Money in the Bank announced that this will be his final year in WWE. He will wrestle his final match in 2025. He did clarify later that he's going to be wrestling the entire year, so he is not retiring at WrestleMania, although it will be his last WrestleMania match, but he's wrestling from January through December. So we're getting the long goodbye for John Cena next year. And Punk said that he would love to lace him up one more time with him before he calls it quits. I said it on Sunday. First Raw on Netflix in January. Maybe the very first match for John Cena in 2025. John Cena versus CM Punk. Run it back one more time. We haven't seen that. We haven't gotten that match in 11 years. By the time we get to 2025, it'll be 12 years. You want to load up that first Netflix Raw with some big stuff. How about John Cena versus CM Punk? Get it done. Raw on Netflix. Boom. There it is. So now with the John Cena stuff out of the way, he turned his attention to Drew McIntyre, who was not there tonight, as I mentioned, because he was suspended by Adam Pearce, and they showed the footage of why. It was after Money in the Bank. McIntyre was an absolute nutcase. He was beside himself with rage. He stormed the post-show set with Jackie Redmond and Wade Barrett and Big E, yelling into the camera like a madman, "I know where your family lives." He's elbowing referees out of the way. Adam Pearce came up from behind him to try to calm him down. He also took an elbow, and that's why he got suspended and fined $50,000. Drew, as I said earlier, won the day on Twitter this morning for his tweet to Adam Pearce, where he said to Pierce, if he had done his job properly, he would not have been caught in the crossfire, and he called him an incompetent, bald bitch. That might have gotten him a little bit of a stiffer fine for saying that. Punk said that he's been trying to teach McIntyre the lesson that there are consequences for your actions. SCM Punk would know that there are indeed consequences for your actions. That's why he was fired by Tony Khan. Because there are consequences for your actions. You think Tony Khan wanted to fire his biggest star? His biggest moneymaker? No, but there are consequences when you choke your coworker. So if anybody can impart that wisdom on Drew McIntyre, CM Punk is actually the perfect person for that. So he recalled saying that McIntyre will never be champion again as long as he has air in his lungs. And Punk said, promise fulfilled. He said he wants to get his hands on McIntyre, though, and he can't do that if he's suspended. This is the conundrum now, because he's not going to be around if he's on the suspended list. So we have a problem here. Punk said that he was fined himself for his own actions on Saturday to the tune of $25,000, but he said it was money well spent. But he asked Jack Tunney or Adam Pearce, whoever, he said it doesn't matter. He wants McIntyre's suspension to be lifted. And then out came not Adam Pearce or Jack Tunney, which would have been a hell of a magic trick. Out comes Seth Rollins, the man who walked into Toronto challenging for the World Heavyweight Championship, who left a loser, who left without a World Heavyweight title. Punk saw Rollins coming out. He looked completely disinterested, and he left the ring to go once again sit on top of the announce desk, cross-legged. Rollins got in the ring, got on the mic, looking down at Punk, and he invites him to get back in the ring, unless he's afraid that he's going to kick his ass. So Punk smiles at this. He grabs a microphone, gets back in the ring. He tells Rollins to watch what he says. The last time they were in the ring together, he told Rollins, look, I'm going to give you a free shot. You take whatever shots you want to take at me, whatever insults you want to hurl my way, you get one freebie, and that's it. So he said, watch what you say. Rollins said he wouldn't dare disrespect the best in the world. You're talking that actions have consequences. He wants to know why that applies to everybody in Punk's life, except for Punk himself. He said he understands mistakes happen with referees, alluding to the botched count on Saturday. He understands that mistakes happen. And he also understands that people cash in Money in the Bank. I mean, who would know better than Seth Rollins about that, right? So he says he understands all of that stuff. But why would CM Punk do the one thing that he warned him not to do when he first came back, which is not to stick his nose in Seth's business? Punk said that he was handling his business. He would like to think that Seth, being a husband and a father to Rue, he would understand that Rollins was, yeah, you bring up his family, right? That's his dander is up here, right? He's not happy about that. Punk said McIntyre is running around with a bracelet that has his wife and dog's name on it. So I guess he equates that, I guess, to Seth Rollins having a child. I guess Larry is like Punk's child, in a way. So he thought he would understand. And he said he's going to get his pound of flesh. He has no issue with Seth Rollins. No issue with Seth. He says that this is personal to him. And if he somehow screwed things up for Seth, he's sorry. He says he didn't mean to screw anything up for him. He's blinded by rage right now. And he's sorry. But because he had a lot of trouble getting those words out. He had trouble bringing himself to apologize, but he finally did, and then it took all of 3 seconds before he followed that up by saying, but because it's Seth, he can't really be that sorry, can he? So Rollins said that Punk has probably never sincerely apologized for anything in his entire life, but he's great at gaslighting people. He's the kind of propaganda machine, but he's got to be the dumbest smart dude that he's ever met in his entire life. He's got it all figured out except the one thing to make him the hero he thinks he is, which is that the world does not revolve around CM Punk. So he can be a selfish bastard anywhere else that he wants to be. He can burn bridges anywhere else. He'll let it slide because he's above him. Seth is above Punk. He was willing to let that selfishness slide until Saturday. Because if it wasn't for Punk, he would be standing here right now as the World Heavyweight Champion. And I do want to address that because I got an email from somebody, but I've seen this sentiment from a couple of different people who think it's some sort of a logic gap he didn't really cost Rollins the title. That, you know, that's a real stretch. It's really not, though, if you think about it, right? You think about what happened on Saturday when McIntyre came out to cash in Money in the Bank. I think it was Seth that he gave the Future Shock DDT to. Seth was down for a while, and it was really down to McIntyre and Priest. Punk shows up, Punk attacks McIntyre, and in the end, Priest hits the South of Heaven chokeslam and pins Drew to retain the World Heavyweight title. The way I look at it is, had McIntyre cashed in and took out Seth the way he did, and let's say setting up for a Claymore kick to Priest, Damian Priest kicked out of a Claymore kick at Clash at the Castle. So again, if you really think about it, had he hit him with the kick, there's no guarantee that Drew would have pinned him and won the title. He could have kicked out. The match continues until Rollins is able to get back to his feet. He gets back in the mix, and then it's anybody's ballgame. Rollins could very well end up winning the World Heavyweight title. So again, it's not really a logic gap to think that he cost this man the championship. You could easily explain it away. Rollins has a right to be angry with McIntyre and to be angry with CM Punk, which is why it looks like he's going to be, you know, shoehorned into this feud here going into SummerSlam, because now he's got a real issue with both these men. And he can't challenge for the World Heavyweight title for the time being, so what else is he going to do but try to make their lives a living hell? So anyway, he's very upset that were it not for Punk, he believes he'd be standing here right now as the World Heavyweight Champion. And for the time being, he says he's out of shots at that title. It's not just a pipe dream. Being champion is the most important thing to him in this business, so now it is time to take from Punk. Said he would hit him right now, but he knows Punk's fragile body can't take it. It is funny to me when he said that, because who is the first person to mention fragile mind, fragile body, fragile spirit? Someone that Rollins knows very well, a good friend of his, right? John Moxley. And so here's another member of the Shield echoing those same sentiments here on the show, calling him fragile, right? Fragile Phil. So before Punk can even speak the name Drew McIntyre again, Rollins said he promises to snap Punk's injured arm. He says actions have consequences. And we got the mic drop from Seth Rollins. This was great. You know, the few times that we have seen these two interact here on TV, or they've shared the ring together with a microphone, it's been great. When Seth gets serious, he's actually a very good promo. And we saw some of that in the lead up to WrestleMania. We had that one segment on SmackDown where we had Cody and Seth face-to-face with Rock and Roman. And remember, Seth got up in Rock's face and he cut this impassioned promo, and it was actually really good. So when he drops the goofiness and the hyena laugh and the, I'm a revolutionary, I'm, you know, a visionary, I'm all this, you know, nonsense that he's usually spewing out there and then laughing every 5 seconds. When he's out there and he's serious, he's actually a very good promo. When you can take him seriously, when he's not out there in, you know, literal clown shoes. So I thought Rollins was actually really good here, and an interesting dynamic in this segment, because there really was no heel and there really was no babyface. Now the fans are going to decide who they want to cheer and who they want to boo. A lot of people look at CM Punk and go, how is this man the babyface here? Now, Punk attacking Drew on Saturday made all the sense in the world, because the last time we saw Punk, he was left bloody in Chicago, although he had it coming. So, like, it's understandable why he would come back and you know, tit for tat. These two have gone back and forth. But it's true. I mean, Punk, it does feel like he's piling on. He comes across like a real prick sometimes. McIntyre has been pushed to the brink. You can understand why. Anybody in his situation, right? If you try to put yourself in that character's mindset right now, he has a right to be pissed off and want to murder this man. You know, we may end up with a double turn out of this by the time this whole feud is over in a few months. Rollins is a babyface, but the people who like CM Punk might boo Rollins if it comes down to Rollins against Punk. And then there are people who really like Seth Rollins who might boo CM Punk and cheer for Seth. So there's no clearly defined roles here, which I think makes it a little more interesting to see where the fans fall on this spectrum. These two also, it really comes across, and there's probably a little bit of this in reality, that they don't like each other. And they do a very good job of projecting that when they're on TV together, that they really don't care for each other, and you feel that when they're out there. So when they're in the ring for a promo segment, and I hate comparing it to other people, but you know, Brett and Shawn is always the one I fall back on because it was so fun, because you knew they really hated each other. And I'm not saying these two really hate each other. I'm just saying, you know that they've had issues in the past. They've never been good friends. And it comes across that way on TV. So it just makes for a better segment. It makes for better television. But, you know, Punk tried to apologize. He couldn't bring himself to do it. Took another jab at Seth. And then, of course, Seth calling him selfish from burning bridges in other places. We all know what he's referring to there. I'll tell you what they did. They did a very good job here of getting me hyped for Seth Rollins against CM Punk. But I don't think we're getting Seth Rollins against CM Punk at SummerSlam one-on-one. Could it end up being a triple threat match? It's possible, but again, how can Punk's first match back be anything other than CM Punk against Drew McIntyre? And how could it be anything but a singles match? But I think that we may be heading for a triple threat match. Of course, I've talked about, you know, Rollins being a referee. I didn't get that sense watching this segment. It's possible. It's possible that he could be involved but not actually be wrestling CM Punk at SummerSlam. And then something happens in that match where McIntyre wins, maybe because of Seth, and then it leads to Rollins against Punk. I think Rollins against Punk could be a big WrestleMania match next year, but you know, they teased it at the beginning of the year, and then they didn't do it because Punk got hurt. Now they're teasing it again. It kind of feels like, can you wait until WrestleMania to do the first match between Rollins and Punk? That's an awfully long time. I'm not sure. So maybe we're headed for a three-way. We'll get some clarity on that next week when Drew is back on the show. Backstage, the bald bitch was speaking with Dominic Mysterio, who said that he did not want to team up with Liv Morgan tonight. He did not want this match, and Pierce told him that it's too bad because the match is happening whether you like it or not. Liv Morgan showed up after Pierce made his exit and said that she felt bad about what happened to Dominic last week. Again, they ended up on top of each other, or he ended up on top of her. She wanted to make it up to him by helping him show who the real daddy of the Mysterio family is. So Dominic said, fine, but you better make sure that we win tonight. And Liv said that we will. We should go talk strategy, go get ready for our match. And so off they went. Off is the direction they went to go fuck. There you go. See, it actually works in that scenario there. Chad Gable, one-on-one with Jey Uso. There was an early belly-to-belly suplex that Gable gave Uso on the floor that was very scary. I still have no idea why they are doing belly-to-belly suplexes on the floor outside. I don't know why they're still doing that. It's completely unnecessary. There's just such a lower margin for error here than there would be in the ring, where there's at least a little bit of give on the mats. And there's no give on those mats outside. And we've seen what can happen with one bad landing. I just think it's an unnecessary thing to be doing. But Jey Uso, I don't know how the hell he took this suplex and how he landed. Like, Gable seemed to execute the maneuver like he does all the time. But for whatever reason, Jey Uso, like, twisted his own body in mid-suplex and looked like he almost landed on his head. It was very strange. Gable was in control after a commercial break when the Wyatt Six appeared, or at least they started to make the lights go off. We heard the sound effect. We started to see some of the lights go off. This distracted Gable. Lights didn't totally go out, and it distracted Gable enough to where he turned around and he got cut in half by a spear from Jey Uso, and Jey pinned him. Now, after the match, Jay is standing in the ring, and the Wyatt Six are clearly coming, and Michael Cole is yelling, you know, to Jay, get out of here. Because, again, it was clear they were going to show up at any moment. Jay Uso, who, over the last several weeks, whenever the Wyatts come out, he disappears. It's like a running gag now. He's standing in the middle of the ring, and he looks directly into the hard camera, and he goes, yeet, and he just fucking guns it. He just leaves the ring. He runs down the aisleway into darkness. Okay, we can't see anything. It's totally dark in the aisleway. That didn't seem very wise. I don't know why you would go that way. You should just lead through the crowd. But he ran down the aisleway into a black hole. We never saw him again. So now we hear the single piano note playing. And fog is filling the ring around Chad Gable, who's laid out in the ring. And Nikki Cross appears yet again at ringside. She has not been acknowledged by this name, but it's Nikki Cross. She once again appears at ringside. Gable exits the ring. He backs his way up the aisleway. Again, I don't know why he would do this, but apparently there was nobody behind him. He was able to safely escape. So they cut back to Nikki Cross. She is on the outside of the ring, standing there with her back turned to the announcers. And then she slowly turns, and we see that in her hands is a box. Another box. I'm starting to think that this woman works for Amazon on the weekends with all of the packages that she delivers every single week. So she takes the box and she walks over to the announce desk and she places it on top of the desk right in front of Pat McAfee, who was back this week. He's been out the last 2 weeks. McAfee was back tonight and she leaves the package there. And that was that. That was the end of that. Now, we're going to get back to this stuff later on. But as far as this segment goes, same thing they've been doing for the last couple of weeks. Now, if they're still doing this 3 weeks from now with her showing up and leaving a box on the table, it's going to run its course. But I can't imagine we have too many of these VHS tapes left. We go backstage. Jackie Redmond congratulates Sheamus on 15 years in WWE. Bronson Reed showed up, said that they shouldn't be celebrating Sheamus' anniversary because Sheamus lost. Reed said that he was the one with the match tonight, called himself the future. Sheamus said that if Reed has been watching his career for the last 15 years, then he should know what happens when you interrupt him. Reed said that he would fight Sheamus, just not tonight. He already has a match. And in fact, he wants Sheamus to watch that match so that he can watch what he does to his mate, Pete Dunne. There's a name that hasn't been mentioned on Raw in a while. And he was up next. It was Pete Dunne one-on-one with Bronson Reed. Before the match, I should say this, though, because Pat McAfee did open the box before this match. But he pulls out a VHS tape. And again, it says, play me. So Michael Cole takes the tape, hands the tape over to one of the crew members to hand deliver to the production truck. So this here, Pete Dunne and Bronson Reed, this was our first time seeing Pete Dunne on Raw in a couple of months. He's been spending his time recently in NXT. Michael Cole did mention on commentary that Tyler Bate is going to be out for a little bit with an injury. They didn't specify exactly how long. They didn't specify what the nature of the injury is, only that it happened on last week's NXT. They had a tag team match on that show, and he got hurt. So now Pete Dunne is riding solo here. And he got a lot of offense in this match. It's not like it was a squash. Reed, though, got a great sit-out powerbomb for a near fall. Ultimately, he finished off Dunne with the Tsunami Splash. When he tried to set Dunne up for another one after the match, that brought Sheamus out. He charged down to the ring, brawled with Reed before catching him with a brogue kick that sent him out to the floor. But when Sheamus went to go embrace Pete Dunne, Dunne pushed him away and wanted nothing to do with him. And in fact, he left the ring, and Sheamus was confused by this, and he couldn't understand what was going on. So that was interesting. Cole did mention on commentary that Sheamus walked out on the Brawling Brutes, right? The Brawling Brutes never really had a real conclusion to it. They just sort of disintegrated. They just Sheamus, I think, got hurt is what happened. But they just separated. Sheamus was out with an injury. Ridge Holland got sent down to NXT. Pete Dunne ended up in this tag team with Tyler Bate. They just sort of all went their separate ways. It was a very unceremonious ending. But on commentary, Michael Cole positioned it like Sheamus walked out on them. And I guess that's the story, is that Tyler Bate and Pete Dunne, or at least Dunne, I guess we don't know how Bate feels, but Dunne may feel like, hey, you walked out on us. You abandoned us. So it looks like there's a little bit of resentment there. And man, you know, Pete Dunne needs this. He really does. Especially if Bate is hurt and is going to be out for a while. He needs this. He needs a good story to really feature him here on this show. Some kind of meaningful program, which it would be with Sheamus, because again, there's history there. Sheamus is still a big name. Certainly bigger than Dunne. And if this means that we're going to get Sheamus and Pete Dunne in, you know, an actual feud, where they're going to have a match, I'm all for it. And it's great for Pete Dunne, because the alternative is him not being on Monday Night Raw. So if it gives him something to do, if it gives us an opportunity maybe to get a glimpse of the old heel Pete Dunne, I'd love that. I remember when he first came into NXT and he had like his own little mini feud going with William Regal. Didn't lead to anything, unfortunately. Regal was done at that point. No pun intended. He was done. See, I didn't even mean to do that. But he was done as far as in-ring competition was concerned. That could have been great. Actually, I've always felt like William Regal could be a great heel manager for Pete Dunne. And if they wanted to, I mean, he's free and clear now. He can be on television if he wanted to. He's not under some sort of, you know, non-compete AEW. You know, he can't be on TV. He can do whatever he wants at this point. I'd love that. You know what? If Paul Ellering could be given a favor job by Triple H, which is basically why he's employed and why he's on television every week, even though he doesn't really do anything. If he can bring back Paul Ellering and give him a job so that he has a role on TV, there's no reason why we can't get some William Regal on television too. That might be the best role for him. And then when we get to November, no matter what he's doing, they can borrow him. One of the GMs can borrow him so that he can go War Games, and then he can go back to whatever he was doing. I'd like to see that. We had the Judgment Day hanging out in a hallway backstage when Seth Rollins interrupted and said that I'm just here to talk to Damian, just to talk. One-on-one, he wants to have a conversation with the world champ. So Priest sent the other members away. He said, it's cool. And they all left, and we had Priest and Rollins. Rollins acknowledged that the champion stuck to his word, right? There was no Judgment Day interference on Saturday, unless, of course, we come to find out that Finn Balor paid off the referee to hold up the count. Right? I mean, he stayed true to his word. He didn't come out. Technically, he didn't physically show up at ringside. But he said, you know, Priest was a man of his word, and so per their gentleman's agreement, he will be a man of his word, and he is not going to come for the title so long as Damian Priest is the World Heavyweight Champion. Rollins said that as good as Priest was on Saturday, he is going to have to be even better at SummerSlam. Priest stopped Rollins from leaving when he went to go walk off. He said he kept his word, and he knows Rollins is going to keep his, but Priest said that he still has a lot to prove. He said that they could throw that gentleman's agreement out the window. And once he is finished with Gunther at SummerSlam, he would go to war with Rollins again. All Seth has to do is name the time and place. Rollins smiled and put his hand out. The two shook hands and Rollins left. Priest took a phone call at that point, asked the person on the other end of the phone, where are you? That right there told you who was coming out at the end of the show. I mean, the minute that you had Dominic and Liv teaming up together in the main event, you should have known how this show was going to end. But there were multiple teases on this show about Damian Priest holding back on some kind of surprise that, you know, he didn't want to let the other members know what it was, but we knew what it was. So, Rollins and Priest already bailing on the stipulation, I see. Right? Seth Rollins is not supposed to be able to challenge for the World Heavyweight title so long as Damian Priest has that belt. And Damian Priest says, you know what? We can forget about our agreement. When I'm done with Gunther, I'll give you the shot. You just let me know where and when. It's not going to matter, though, of course, because Damian Priest is not leaving SummerSlam as the World Heavyweight Champion, so this is all for nothing. But the way Priest acted here made him look like he had a level of integrity that the other members of the Judgment Day do not. You know, he doesn't duck any challenges. This man doesn't want anybody else's help. He wants to go out there and do it on his own, right? He's very virtuous. This is all part of the slow burn to a babyface turn. It's been going on ever since WrestleMania. We've had other instances of him pulling members of the Judgment Day off of people, trying to get involved in his match, and him saying, no, 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 I didn't ask for this. I don't want you to help me out, right? I mean, we've seen this coming for a while. This is what it's building to. It's building to him eventually leaving the Judgment Day and going babyface and feuding with Finn Balor. Balor may end up being the one who ultimately causes his demise at SummerSlam and costs him the World Heavyweight title. Sami Zayn was out next. He came to the ring in his flannel shirt, looking like Canadian Mick Foley, after beating Bron Breakker at Money in the Bank, still the Intercontinental Champion. Zayn said that he is no longer the underdog. He is a champion. I love this idea that, you know, he's still the underdog. Like, he was the underdog going into WrestleMania last year. And he was a champion coming out of WrestleMania, just like he was this year. He won the tag team titles with Kevin Owens. So, like, this idea that he's still an underdog. I mean, I guess some people would have called him that going into the match with Braun, but I think he's pretty much established that he is not the underdog anymore. He said he's earned a certain level of respect that Bron Breakker did not bring to their match at Money in the Bank. He said it's one thing to knock him down, but it's another thing to keep him down. Bron Breakker made his way out to the ring to his new music that he debuted at Money in the Bank on Saturday. I had faint praise for it. I said that it's much better than the last generic theme that they gave him, but that doesn't mean that his music is really anything good. It's better than what he had, but it's still not great. And the music continues to be a real problem in this company. So when you have a rising star like a Bron Breakker, he needs a really cool badass theme, and he doesn't have that right now. And I just wish they would get their act together on that front, because music is such an important part of the presentation. And, you know, when you have people in your company, when you have talent on your roster, I think I didn't see that little segment. I don't know if it was on social media or whatever it was like a month ago. I think it was Malik Blade and Idris Inafe from NXT. Mocking Def Rebel. They were actually making fun of how horrible the Def Rebel songs are. I forgot the exact quote or the exact joke. But when you got people openly in your own company on your roster making fun of how horrible the music is, you got to make a change. But they haven't done that yet. So he gets in the ring. Zayn is asking him, hey, you're looking for a fight? Looking for a rematch for my title? Braun was just staring at him. He wasn't saying anything. Braun is looking more and more orange, by the way, every single week. He keeps this up, and he's going to get a cease and desist from Taz, because he don't fuck around. I mean, the spray tan is just, it's out of control. It really is. It really is. I think he was wearing, was it like last week? Maybe it was Money in the Bank. I don't remember. He had like a, I don't know if it was his singlet or he had like a shirt on maybe or a wife beater, whatever it was. And you could literally, you could see this, like the orange that like rubbed off on it. Dude, come on. Just pump the brakes a little bit, all right? Just a little bit. So he goes, look, are you going to say anything? Or you're just going to keep staring at me all night. So Breakker said, you know, I came out to look you in the eye. And he noted that Sammy was the only man in that locker room that has beaten him. Breakker said, there's no reason for me to get a rematch, right? You beat me. So there's no reason for it. So he's sounding like he understands that he was beaten. That's it, right? He's got to go to the back of the line now. But as he's saying this, he's kind of walking around and he has put some distance between himself and Sami Zayn. It's almost like he's walked to the ropes on the opposite side of the ring while he's speaking. And so you can see, okay, something's about to happen here. And then sure enough, he explodes out of nowhere and spears Sami Zayn down to the mat. A wicked spear he unleashed on this man. Then he mounts him and he starts working him over with punches until referees and producers come out. I spied Jason Jordan was in there. Adam Pearce finally gets Bron Breakker to leave the ring. And, you know, the bald bitch follows him out of the ring to make sure that he's going to leave, asking him, what's wrong with you? And Breakker did the fake out like he's going to leave, but then he turns around and he sprints around the ring and he spears Sami Zayn on the floor for a second time. As they were escorting Bron Breakker out for real this time, Ilya Dragunov comes out. And Ilya Dragunov has to be restrained by the officials from getting his hands on Braun. Braun is looking at him. I guess Ilya's saying some stuff. He's threatening him or whatever. And Braun is great here. Because Braun starts to mock him. And he's saying like, oh, I'm so scared. I'm so scared. So that was funny. Dragunov ran over to go check on Sami Zayn. After a break, Dragunov was in the trainer's room with Sammy, who was getting his ribs tended to by the medics. Adam Pearce was there as well. And Dragunov said that he wanted Bron Breakker. And Pearce said, you want him? He goes, you got him. Tonight. So he made the match official. And here I had people telling me that Bron Breakker was damaged coming out of Money in the Bank. Now, I thought that it was a little odd that they would beat him in the way that they did, too. You know, going into it, I thought it was going to be a fluke win for Sammy, and Sammy retains. Like, Sammy retaining the title didn't surprise me. Him winning with a Huluva kick surprised me, but I didn't hate it. And as I said on Saturday, as long as they follow it up on Raw on Monday by having Braun come out and either destroy Sammy or just destroy anybody, he'll be fine. Because people can buy into that. People can get behind that. It's not going to be difficult to, you know, get people back aboard the Bron Breakker train if they hopped off on Saturday, which I'm sure most people didn't. They could see that this guy is a beast. They could see that this guy is going to be a huge star. He's going to be a future world champion. Getting kicked in the face by one of the top stars in this company is not going to damage Bron Breakker. And it did not. And what's the first thing he did when he showed up on television tonight? He speared Sami Zayn, not once, but twice, and left him laying. And had to be escorted to the back by officials because he's crazy. And he can't be controlled. So it had absolutely no negative effect whatsoever on Bron Breakker. It took less than 72 hours to prove all of these people wrong. And as I said, I told you. Going to be fine. He is going to be as protected as anybody going forward. I promise you, Triple H knows what he has in Bron Breakker. So he is not somebody that you got to worry about. They're going to lose interest in him. They're going to fuck him up. He's going to be just fine. So this is the beginning, not the end, with him and Sami Zayn. I thought we might be getting a four-way at SummerSlam. Braun, Sami, Sheamus, Ludwig Kaiser. Kaiser, no mention of Kaiser on the show tonight. He did mention last week he's got broken ribs. It's possible that maybe they're not going to get him back as quickly as they thought. And instead of a four-way at SummerSlam, it might end up being a three-way. You know, if not a straight rematch, it looks like Ludwig Kaiser, his spot, effectively could be taken by Ilya Dragunov, as it was in the qualifying match for the Money in the Bank match. And so if we end up with a three-way with those guys, fine with me. I still feel like Braun is going to leave SummerSlam the Intercontinental Champion. Whether they do a two-way, a two-way is called a match. A three-way or a four-way, a two-way. Has anybody ever referred to that as a two-way? What the hell's wrong with me? A two-way. Gotta drink more of this. Anyway. I crack myself up sometimes. I really do. So Michael Cole then pitched it to a short package from Money in the Bank. When John Cena made his announcement, Cole said that Money in the Bank was bittersweet. It's bittersweet because they learned that the greatest of all time is going to have to hang up the boots. And as I said during the show, I said, how can you hang up the boots when you wear sneakers to wrestle in? I don't really understand that. Shouldn't he be hanging up the jorts? John Cena, I don't think I've ever seen John Cena wear boots since maybe the whatever the last match was in 2002 before he became the Doctor of Thugonomics. Yeah, like early Ruthless Aggression John Cena, when he debuted, he had wrestling boots. But has he ever worn boots since then? I think it's pretty much been sneakers, right, ever since. Pumps, whatever it is that he was wearing. Converse. Does he ever wear Converse to the ring? I don't think so. I don't think you could really wrestle in Converse, though, right? Skechers, maybe. I've got those Skechers slip-ins. I asked the guy when I bought them, I go, can I go running in these? He goes, I wouldn't recommend it. So I guess you can't wrestle in them probably either. Anyway, just a question to ponder. How one can hang up the boots when one does not wear boots? I think it's a perfectly valid question. We had a six-man tag team match. It was Braun Strowman, The Miz, and R-Truth against Finn Balor, JD McDonagh, and Carlito. His hair just gets poofier and poofier every single week. You know, it looks like Sideshow Bob stuck his finger in a light socket, and somehow it just actually got worse. I don't know how long he's going to allow this to go on for. How big does he want it to get? I guess we'll have to wait and see. R-Truth, late in the match, he was begging to be tagged in. So Strowman tagged him in, and then Braun Strowman and R-Truth, together in a show of unity, went to ringside for the Strowman Express. We got a double Strowman Express, and they went outside and they mowed down Balor and they mowed down Carlito. And Carlito went one way and his hair went the other. So McDonagh was hiding over behind the barricade in the timekeeper's area. Strowman spotted him and chased him away. R-Truth was playing to the crowd, and he got hit by a shotgun dropkick by Finn Balor, who went up top, came off with the double stomp, and pinned Truth to win it for the Judgment Day. Miz, they got a shot of the Miz. He did not look happy with Truth when this match was over. So it looks like a return to the dark side soon for the Miz. I think the Miz is finally at the point where he realizes it's time for this shit to come to an end. So the awesome Truth may not be long for this world. Everybody wave goodbye to the Strowman Express. There he goes to control his narrative. Backstage, CM Punk was talking with the bald bitch, who said that Punk is half the problem here, and he's not medically cleared. Pierce said that he would call Drew McIntyre to set up a meeting, because again, Punk wants him to unsuspend Drew McIntyre. So Pierce said, okay. He's going to call Drew to set up a meeting for next week to see if he is in a place mentally to do business. He said that he needed Punk, though, to stay home. Like, you can't be here. He knows McIntyre likes to pick fights. Punk is not one to back down from a fight. He said if it happens again, the match with you and him and your title aspirations for the future, all of that, it goes out the window. So he told Punk, go home. Pet Larry, and get healthy. And Punk agreed to stay home next week. Sorry, Dayton, Ohio. No CM Punk for you. Get your refunds now. At least they told you in advance he's not going to be on the show next week. Of course, we don't know, right? He could still show up and try to fuck this guy over again for the fourth time in some way. He may well show up anyway. Just to screw, although he was warned, though, right? Pierce did warn him, though. Like, if you show up, like, that's it. Like, your title hopes, the match with McIntyre that you want. So I trust that CM Punk is not going to be on the show, and instead he'll be home petting Larry and petting AJ. Why not? Inside the Judgment Day clubhouse, Dominik was playing 2K24 when Liv said that we should work on our double team moves. And she said that Dom wants this as badly as she does. Dom said the only thing he wants badly is to beat his deadbeat dad. And Liv claimed, oh yeah, that's what I meant. So she said Dominik needed to loosen up a little bit. She shoved him down on the couch, and she gets on top of him. Again, this is not his fault. There is video evidence. Somebody should show this to Rhea Ripley. She doesn't watch the show. There's video evidence to support the fact that Dominik Mysterio here is the victim. He did nothing wrong. I don't know why anybody would be upset with him. He showed a lot more restraint than most people would. He showed a lot more restraint than any of you in the chat would. I know that. I could guarantee you that. So this kid gets shoved on the couch. She climbs on top of him and she grabs his leg and begins to stretch his leg. Is bending his leg. So it looks like they're in a very compromising position. This was their Stratus Triple H moment when Stephanie walked in on them. Only not quite as bad as that. Damian Priest walks in the middle of all this, big smile on his face, and then you see each of the other members of the Judgment Day, they poke their head out from around the corner to see what's going on here. So Liv sees them, she leaves the room. Priest said, look, I don't even want to know what that was. He said to Dom, you should have been done with this by now. He added, it's not that hard. And Carlito, while looking down at Dominic's crotch, said, it looks pretty hard to me. Carlito, you know, I have to say, Carlito, it still is very funny to me how he has just become just a regular member of the Judgment Day. But they do give Carlito some of the better one-liners on these shows. This probably was his best one. You know, as he looks down here and he goes, well, it looks pretty hard to me. I mean, this guy should be a comedian here, right? Instead of throwing tomatoes at him, they could throw apples at him. So Dominik said that Priest sounded like his dad. And Priest said, you know, I'm starting to understand your dad more and more every single week. And Dominik said, look, I thought I'd put an end to it. I'll put an end to it now. He goes, I thought I did. I'll take care of it. So after Dom left the room, Balor said Priest had mentioned that he wanted to tell them something. So what is it? And Priest was going to tell them, and then he thought better of it. And he said, you know what? I'm going to keep it to myself. And Dominic's going to find out later anyway. So again, hint number two, like hint, hint, right? Stay tuned to the end of the show because you know who is going to be showing up. They basically told you without telling you. Then it was time for the latest Bo Dallas video. This was the VHS tape that they had sent to the truck. So we were about to see the next chapter here of the therapy session with Howdy and Bo Dallas. And Uncle Howdy wants to know more about his family. This really is like a therapy session. He's like, tell me about your family. And he, being Bo, said that he took those who no one wanted, the discarded, the forgotten. He gave them a purpose. They're so happy that you remembered them. Being a glutton for punishment doesn't make abandonment hurt any less. There's been loss, too much, but grief is the price they pay for love. And as he's speaking, they're flashing all the different faces of the different members. So we see Joe Gacy, and we see, you know, Mercy the Buzzard, who's Dexter Loomis, and we see Nikki Cross. We see Ramblin' Rabbit, who's Eric Rowan. Bo Dallas says that they must set the captives free, so they need no master. Dallas asked, do you think we're sick? And Howdy's voice said, yes, I do. And Dallas added, then sick is what we will be. It is so fucking eerie in these videos to look at Bo Dallas and just see how much he looks like Bray. I don't know if it's the editing. Like, I know they're brothers, but like more than if you just looked at him in like regular natural light. I don't know if it's the cutaways that they do back and forth with him and Howdy. Yeah, because Bray had like the dreads and he had that hat, and Howdy does too. And they do these kind of back and forth cuts between Bo Dallas and Uncle Howdy. I don't know what it is, but man, it's eerie. Like, there were a few moments in this video where I for like a split second, I thought I was looking at Bray Wyatt. Very eerie. But it does not look like we are going to be getting individual videos like I was kind of hoping we would, or I thought we would, where we have the other members of the faction featured or in their own little therapy session. I mean, it's only been a few weeks, but it doesn't look like we've had three tapes now, and they're all involving Bo Dallas. So it doesn't look like we're going to get them for the individual members, but it does sound like we'll get them in the ring soon because he's talking about setting them free. Now, backstage when this was done, Chad Gable caught up to Adam Pearce and said, "Did you see that video that just aired?" And he said the Wyatts are clearly talking about him in these videos, and he was very upset that Pearce wasn't doing anything about it. Gable said that he would take care of it his own way and that he expects a sincere apology from Pearce and everybody else. Gable said, "How about a vacation also after the month that I've had?" And then he walked off. Pearce opened the door and he finds Bo Dallas sitting in his office. And Bo looks up at him and he smiles. And Pearce closes the door behind him, which doesn't seem very wise. That's not very smart. Lock yourself in a room with Bo Dallas, who just admitted in the video that you just aired on your television show that he is a sick man. Let me lock myself in a room with him. So it looks to me like maybe Bo Dallas and not necessarily Uncle Howdy. Could be Bo Dallas one-on-one with Chad Gable at SummerSlam. Could also be, well, I don't want to mention the Chad Gable thing later just yet. Could be a multi-man match. It could be a six-man tag. But I'm thinking one-on-one, Gable and Bo Dallas seems very likely for SummerSlam. Could be why he wanted to talk to Adam Pearce. We had Bron Breakker one-on-one with Ilya Dragunov. Fun match. Breakker clotheslined Dragunov to ringside, followed him to the floor. Bron got a running start and was caught with a kick by Dragunov as he charged in. Dragunov, and I didn't see how it happened, he had a bloody gash on his shin. So I didn't see if it was when he got, you know, dumped out of the ring, or again, I don't know exactly when it happened, but it was noticeable. So he went to go charge at Bron. All of a sudden, the camera pans out and we see Bron Breakker with an office chair and he just throws it at Dragunov's head. And he goes down. The referee, of course, immediately calls for the disqualification. After the match, Sami Zayn runs out, bad ribs and all. He's got the tape on the ribs and clotheslines Bron over the top rope to the floor. Sami goes to check on Dragunov before Breakker pulls Sami out of the ring, runs him into the ring post, and then tosses him over the announce desk. Dragunov was fighting Breakker, who cut him off, and then tossed him over the announce desk as well. Bron Breakker stood on top of the announce desk, and he began to bark. As the camera, we got a wide pan-out shot of Bron Breakker standing on the table and the entire crowd in Ottawa. That was a cool shot. And again, literally standing tall. Literally standing on top of his opponents, above his opponents. That is how Bron Breakker was booked on Monday Night Raw tonight. This man is going to be just fine. This man is going to be a champion very soon. He lost nothing by losing in the way that he did at Money in the Bank. It was an overreaction from people who were worried that it could somehow stifle his push or stall his momentum in some way. People aren't going to look at him quite the same way. They did what they needed to do tonight to reestablish to people that just because he lost and got pinned on Saturday doesn't mean that this is not a man to be feared and that you don't want to fuck with Bron Breakker. It was an immediate rehab. So I thought that they handled him about as well as you could have asked for on this show. Now, highlights aired of Karrion Kross attacking Kofi Kingston last week. He got him in an arm submission. Michael Cole said that Kofi suffered an AC joint sprain in his shoulder. He could be out of action for a number of weeks. Karrion Kross then delivered a backstage promo while Scarlett, Akam, Razar, Paul Ellering stood behind him. Cross said that he regretted to inform everybody that Kofi Kingston would not be playing the accordion. He said the old guard will make way for the new, even John Cena. And he said that he always thought Xavier Woods was a hell of a talent. He said he could become his own man or he would hospitalize him like Kofi. We had Bird Girl, Lyra Valkyria, flying into action tonight, teaming up with Caden Carter and Katana Chance to take on Damage Control. They replayed, by the way, two of the more insane spots from that Women's Money in the Bank ladder match on Saturday, one of which was the Lyra German suplex spot. Lyra was hanging from the ladder and grabbed the hold of Io and just dumped her backwards with a German suplex. So that was crazy enough. But then they showed the terrifying Michinoku driver that Io gave to Zoe Stark off the ladder onto a ladder bridge down below. And the ladder did not break. I mean, it may have started to break, but like it didn't break. It didn't completely break. And it was a very rough looking, rough sounding landing for Zoe. She's insane for even agreeing to take that spot. Io is one of those people I would think is going to be very trusted, but just, I mean, I say this as somebody who has a fear of heights anyway. I'd shit a brick if you had me on top of that. I mean, I could climb a ladder to change a light bulb and I'm sweating bullets. So I have all the respect in the world for these men and women who go in there. And not only are they climbing these ladders at great heights sometimes, they get these big ass ladders sometimes they pull out. You've got to climb the ladder. And you also have to execute these maneuvers that in some cases, like it could be a sunset bomb, it could be some kind of big dot. Look at the spot that Chelsea Green had at the end of that match on Saturday where she got shoved off by Tiffany Stratton and took this huge fucking bump off the top of the ladder, out of the ring, crashes through two tables down below. The margin for error there is very slim. But she pulled it off, but I just can't even imagine. I get on a step stool, and if it's a little shaky, I start to get, you know, my fucking palms start to sweat. It's really bad. But man, that Michinoku driver was scary. One of the scariest things, honestly, that I've ever seen in a ladder match. It's a notch below the Salida del Sol spot. And if you saw that TLC show, you know what I'm talking about. When Kalisto, from the top of a ladder, gave a Salida del Sol to Jey Uso onto a ladder bridge, and they crashed through the ladder bridge. That is still the scariest thing I've ever seen in a ladder match. Scariest fucking thing I've ever seen. And they nailed it, and I don't think anybody got hurt, thankfully, but they nailed it. But man, that spot still lives rent-free in my head. This was below that, but it was pretty close. So there was a fan in the front row with a sign that said, "Marry me, Damage Control." Why settle for one, I guess, when you can go for all three? Although I think with Io, you're going to have to fight evil for her. You're going to have to get the House of Torture involved. Please don't. Please don't do that. Dakota Kai ran Caden Carter into the ring post. Io launched Kairi Sane over the top rope, supposed to be onto her opponents, but she kind of overshot them and hit the floor, but she seemed to be okay. Io Sky then hit Carter in the ring with her over the moonsault, mostly got her knees though. Still, she got the pin to win it for Damage Control. After the match, who runs in? The brand new trio in WWE. Sonya Deville, Shayna Baszler, and Zoe Stark. They attack Damage Control. Some heel-on-heel violence here. Baszler and Deville held Io while Zoe told her, "You cost me everything." Harkening back to Saturday. Stark threw a kick at her. Zoe then tossed Io in the air, and then Baszler hit her with a knee strike on the way down. Sonya then hit her finish on Sky, and the new trio stood tall to end the segment. They've been teasing it. No surprise they ended up together ever since Sonya showed up again a couple months ago. She's been trying to recruit these two. They have not been very receptive to her pitches, and obviously something clicked, something changed in their head. She was very persuasive, and she has convinced them that they all will benefit by working together as opposed to being apart. So now we have a new faction here in WWE. Sonya is a better promo than Shayna and Zoe are individually. I think a lot of that skill really was developed in her time on SmackDown when she was the assistant to Adam Pearce, or what was her exact role? It wasn't GM. I forgot what they were calling them back then. Did she have an official title? I don't even remember. She was basically like a co-GM, though. That's what she was. And I feel like because she was in that role for so long, it allowed her to develop her verbal skills that much more. So she's a better promo than they are. She could be helpful as a mouthpiece for the group in that way. Beyond that, though, I mean, it's too early to really say what kind of benefit this is going to have for any of them. You know, it'll get Sonya on TV. They found a role for her, but I mean, I don't think that Shayna and Zoe are going to be in a role very much different than the one they're in now.
I am the learning tree.
Antonio with a second
$12
super chat. Thank you. Antonio Taylor showing love tonight here on The Sound Off. You'll love to see it. Thank you, sir. Jackie Redmond then spoke with Deville, Baszler, and Stark in the back. And Sonya said they just sent the message to the locker room about who runs the division. She said she's been trying to make Baszler and Zoe the killers that she knows they can be. Alba Fire and Isla Dawn showed up, mocked them, said that they run the division as long as they have the women's tag team tie. Yeah, what division? What division? We have Alba and Isla. We have Shayna and Zoe. We have Damage Control. We have Caden Carter and Katana Chance. We have Bianca and Jade. Okay? Decent number of teams. Does it really feel like there's a division, though? I just named like 5 or 6 teams, but does it really feel like there's a division? It doesn't. They've put together a small, you know, division to work with here. Bianca and Jade are not going to be a long-term team. I think we know that. But again, there have been reports this week, I'm sure you've seen them, and I don't know how reliable they are. Meltzer, you know, backed up the original report, but I mean, what the hell does that mean? That WWE is considering bringing in new women's mid-card titles, a women's intercontinental title and a women's US title. And again, it's not confirmed. It's not like it's an imminent thing or anything like that, but it's being talked about. I've talked about that. I've talked about the introduction of a women's intercontinental title for a while now, and I said that I think the introduction of a women's North American title in NXT is a little sign. They're trying that out in NXT. Things in NXT could eventually be adapted for the main roster. So might not be that much longer before we get a women's intercontinental title and see how that goes. And then you could always introduce a U.S. title as well down the road if you want to. I would prefer that if they're going to do that, they junk the tag belts and they don't just add more titles. But it sounds like they're at least considering that as a possibility. It's not even that they don't have the women for it. They have plenty of women. And it would give them something to fight for. But again, you have to still put the time and effort into developing compelling storylines for them to be a part of if you're going to feature them on television. If you're just going to give them a belt and they're not going to have a story around it, then who cares, right? There's no story right now around the women's tag team titles. Alba and Isla won them in Scotland. The story with Bianca and Jade is going to be Bianca and Jade when eventually they are no longer a team. It's really just about them. It's not about the belts. The belts are a means to get there. I don't know if they're going to win them back when they have their rematch, but they're heading for a rematch. Maybe they lose again. But let's be honest here. There really isn't much of a division when it comes to these women's tag team titles. The bigger news here, though, this backstage segment here with Sonya and Zoe and Shayna, the bigger story is what was going on behind them. A Triple H special. Always got to be paying attention when you have these backstage segments in the hallway, in the parking lot. There's always something going on. And in the background, Chad Gable could be seen having a conversation, a long conversation, with the Creed brothers, and Ivy Nile was there with them as well. They were all in the background for the duration of this segment. The mana is strong. The mana is strong with this. Chad Gable and the Creed. Let's go. Let's go already. You've been teasing it now for months. Enough. Enough with the blue balls. Let's go. Get these men together. Let's get this thing gear. Let's move this forward here. Hey, Chad's going to need help, right? He's going to need help. He's going to need friends for the Wyatt Six. So why not align with the Creeds? If Otis and Tozawa, who apparently is injured, but if Otis and Tozawa and Maxine, if they don't want to reunite Alpha Academy, he's got to move on to a new academy. So it's happening. The mana is strong. Thank you, Rock. Today's episode is sponsored by BetterHelp. Do you ever find yourself comparing your life to someone else's on social media? I feel like we're all guilty of that at one time or another, especially these people or these influencers who have like hundreds of thousands or millions of followers. They're posting pictures of their fancy houses or vacations they're taking around the world. I'll be sitting here sometimes thinking, how do I get that? I want that. It's easy to envy what other people have or what you think they have, because a lot of people project happiness, but that doesn't mean they are happy. There are lots of people who live with far less who end up much happier than those who have money and nice things. Therapy can help you focus on what you want in your life rather than what others have, so you can start living your best life. Therapy can do so many amazing things for you. It can help you understand yourself better and better understand the things that are troubling you and how best to fix them or work around them. Just having someone to talk to about these things can be immensely helpful. It's okay to admit that you don't have all the answers. I don't have all the answers. I wish I did. Sometimes I think I do, and then reality smacks me in the face and I realize, boy, was I wrong. And that's okay. If you're thinking of starting therapy, give BetterHelp a try. It's entirely online and designed to work around your schedule. All you do is fill out a brief questionnaire to get matched with a licensed therapist, and rest easy, knowing that you can switch therapists at any time for no additional charge. Stop comparing and start focusing with BetterHelp. Visit BetterHelp.com/Solomonster today to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/Solomonster. The main event was Liv Morgan and Dominic Mysterio against Rey Mysterio and Zelina Vega. Zelina Vega had Liv Morgan seated in the corner. This was early in the match. Okay, so she had Liv Morgan seated in the corner. And she was about to do something, like, I don't know if it was going to be a Bronco bust. I don't know what she was going for. But before she could do anything, Dominic got in the ring and stood in her path. Rey came in and tripped Dominic so that he fell face first. He fell face forward down into Liv Morgan's crotch. He took a face full of crotch. Hear from Liv Morgan. This guy already had dinner. He was already full. And his face just boom, right there. Again, not his fault. He's a victim in all this. This poor guy. We skip to the end here. Liv and Zelina. Double clothesline. Both women go down. Rey and Dom end up tagging back into the match. And Rey goes for a 619 to his son. Dominic catches his father's legs. But here comes Zelina Vega with a 619, only she gives a 619 to Dominic right in the dick. And so down he goes. Rey goes up, he hits the splash, and the pin is broken up by Liv Morgan. Zelina gets sent into the ring post on the outside by Liv. Back inside, Rey puts Dom up on the top rope, and Liv Morgan slides a chair into the ring. Referee sees this, of course, and the referee goes over to retrieve the chair and to dispose of it outside the ring, and when the referee does so, Liv Morgan gets up on the apron, yanks Rey's leg, and he crotches himself on the top rope. Down goes Rey Mysterio. And Dominic hits a frog splash to his father, and he knocks off his dad for the first time ever. It's not a singles match, but a win is a win, and this is officially the first Dominic Mysterio win over his father. But then the real story unfolded when the match was over. After the match, Dom and Liv, they're all excited about their big win, and they hug. And so for a moment, Dom loses himself. A few seconds later, he realizes, oh shit, he backs away from her. But then Liv jumps on him, and Dom ends up falling on top of her. How many times has Dominic fallen on top of this woman in the last probably 4 weeks or 5 weeks? I've lost track. So he falls on top of her. They're right there. They are on the verge of kissing. Right? Their faces are right there. They're on the verge of kissing when all of a sudden they are interrupted by the theme music for Rhea Ripley. And this right here got the biggest reaction of the entire night in a building that frankly was pretty quiet for a good majority of the show. Put it this way, the crowd in Ottawa was not like the crowd in Toronto. But they reacted big when Rhea came out, and Liv had a look on her face. I mean, her eyes were bugging out of her head. Both of them got this great shot of Dom and Liv in the ring looking down the aisle, and they're in shock. They can't believe what they see. So Liv gets the hell out of there, because now Rhea is storming her way down to the ring. And Liv Morgan is not going to stick around and wait for her. She hops over the barricade. She runs off into the crowd. So she's gone. Rhea then gets into the ring, and Dominic is standing there. He's got his head hung low. And she takes her finger, and with her finger, she props his head up right under his chin, picks his head up so that he can look her in the eye. And she tells him that mommy's back. Dom went to go for a hug, and she pushed him away. So the USA Network feed at that point cut off. So if you were watching like I was on USA, you didn't see this last part. But the show was not over yet. But really, all that happened is Rhea left the ring, and Dom went to go follow her, and he's trying to explain himself, and she's just walking. She's not hearing any of it. And right before she was about to walk through the curtain to the back, she just put her arm out and pushed him aside. She did not want to hear what he had to say. She didn't beat him up. She didn't do anything. He might have enjoyed it. I don't know. But she pushes him out of the way, and off to the back she goes. And that is how they ended the show, which is a hell of a cliffhanger for next week's show, because now we know Rhea is back and she's pissed. And what's she going to do next? What's she going to do? What's she going to say? What does this mean for Liv and Dom, right? These are the questions now that we are left with coming out of this show. But this man, again, I reiterate, was pursued for weeks and weeks and weeks by this crazy woman. Even after he said, I want nothing to do with you, leave me alone. Why do you keep bothering me? And she kept bothering him. I don't see what he did wrong. I don't. Why do these people boo him? It's not his fault. He showed a lot of restraint. He should be applauded. Actually, he should be commended for it, to be honest with you. All he wants to do is sit in the clubhouse, play 2K24, and eat his chicken nuggets. That's all he wants. Is that too much to ask? That actually doesn't sound like a bad idea. Play video games, eat chicken nuggets all day. Sounds good to me. Grow a mustache. Maybe I'll grow a Dom mustache. I'll have to dye it, though, because you won't see it. I'll end up with the fucking Hogan Fu Manchu. I'd have to dye it, though, so it's darker. But maybe I'll grow a Dominic Mysterio mustache over here. But anyway, again, it's a nice cliffhanger. Rhea Ripley, you heard the reaction she got. This woman is a fucking star. And now they have a huge name back here on the road to SummerSlam. So Becky Lynch is still out. Charlotte Flair is still out. Asuka's out. They're missing a bunch of people. But they got back one of their biggest players that went down after WrestleMania. Now, we don't know for sure. We don't know for a fact that Liv Morgan and Rhea Ripley are going to be wrestling at SummerSlam. We don't know what her medical status is. There were reports a few weeks ago that WWE was considering ways to bring Rhea back to TV, just to get her back on the show, not necessarily get her back in the ring. So if I had to venture a guess, I think we're going to get Rhea Ripley against Liv Morgan at SummerSlam. Because that's the match. There's no other match. That's the match if you're going to have Liv defend the world title. But it all depends on whether or not she's medically cleared. You know, we've seen Punk, a little bit of physicality with him. He's not cleared yet. They expect him to be. They hope he is. I hope he is. So a little bit of physicality from her on TV. It's very different than having a full-blown match. We'll have to wait until next week. I'm sure we'll get some news on that this week. But they're to be commended here because, again, they took a huge negative where they lost one of their biggest stars and a woman who was world champion for over a year, and they had to strip her of the belt, which they would not do if they thought that she was going to be back in a few weeks. It's a minor injury. They obviously felt the need to get the belt off of her. And now Liv Morgan has been the beneficiary of that because Liv Morgan was not really doing much. And they created this whole story out of nothing now. They gave her something to do. They came up with a story that was compelling enough that a lot of people, again, have been blowing up these videos and have really been digging the storyline. And there are weeks where it could be one of the more entertaining parts of the show. But Liv Morgan's been able to have this run now. It's not necessarily a very good run, but she's nonetheless had this run as the women's world champion. Nobody's going to look back on these few months of Liv Morgan as champion and say, what a legendary reign this was. What great matches she had during this run. It's really not about that. It's about this story here. This is what it's all about. And when Rhea comes back, Rhea is going to fucking kill this woman. This is what people have been waiting for. And when they have that first match, Rhea still may not win that belt back. I think they're going to try to drag this out as long as they possibly can. They have a good story going here. I don't think they're going to want it to end at SummerSlam. So if they could extend it another month or two, then I guarantee you they're going to do whatever they need to do to drag this out as long as they possibly can. But they took a negative and turned it into a positive. They created this whole new story out of it. And now you have also the tension between Rhea and Dom. Are they ultimately going to split them up? Are they going to be reunited and go back to normal? Is there going to be a Judgment Day in 6 months at all? Because Damian Priest feels to me like he's on his way out. Where does Rhea stand in all that? Rhea's a babyface now. We all knew that it was coming. Rhea Ripley is total babyface. So her and Priest are going to end up, I think, going the babyface route. What that means for the Judgment Day, I don't know. I'm sure Carlito was on his hands and knees praying that they don't split up. He found a new group. He's got a good thing going. He knows that if there's no Judgment Day, he's got nothing. Nobody wants the Judgment Day to survive more than Carlito, I assure you. Overall, though, I thought it was a good show. Again, not as good as some of the ones they've had over the last few weeks, but I did think overall it was a good show. Gunther is back next week. They had dueling video packages, one from Damian Priest where he cut a promo on him, challenging him to come to Raw next week. They had a very good Gunther video package chronicling his time in WWE from 2019 when he showed up, looking a lot bigger than he looks now. It's so weird. It almost looks like two different people. My God, I mean, he's gotten himself into tremendous shape, and good for him, you know, and good for his health, but He looks so different, you know, than if you were to show people who maybe didn't know any better side by side when he showed up in NXT UK for the first time and the Gunther of today, I think they would look at that and they would squint and they would go, wait a minute, you know, is that the same person? It's not. That was Walta. This is Gunther. Two different people. He'll be back on the show next week, though. We haven't seen him in a while. And Drew McIntyre will be back as well to have his meeting with Adam Pearce. So that is on tap for Raw next Monday night. Here is the Twitter poll. What did you think of Raw after Money in the Bank? 80.6% of you have given this show a thumbs up, 12% thumbs in the middle, and just 7% thumbs down. So it looks like a lot of you really liked Monday Night Raw tonight. All right, let's go through your many messages here. You guys have a lot to say. You're a chatty bunch. Let's begin, though, with Mr. GMB. Not even joking. I would have no problem with Oba, talking about Oba Femi, running through Ilya, Braun, Fatu, Gunther in just 1 year. He could beat Cody at SummerSlam, and I would love it. Well, you may love it, but it's a good thing you're not booking the show, because you're going to burn through every big match you could do with him in a year, and then you're not going to have anything to do with him. That's bad booking. You got to be smarter. You don't want to give all that away. Jessica Herman, Breaker Express is better than the Strowman Express. Thanks for the great analysis, as always. My go-to podcast. Well, Jessica, thank you. I'm glad I am your go-to. Matt Omen, how would you fix Karrion Kross? I think I've said before that what I've seen from him in Scarlet, even on WWE's own YouTube channel, every now and then they'll post a kind of like an off-camera type of video. I think there was something when they went to Saudi Arabia once, it was them and maybe some other wrestlers, and they followed them around like a vlog type thing. Great personality there, and I think that if you just showed the real person, I think he'd have a shot at getting over in a bigger way. These characters that he's been playing, not that he's bad at it as far as like the promos, he's actually a very good promo, but it's just not connecting. It's not catching fire in the way that they want. So I would make him more real, if that makes sense. You know, let him be more himself. And incorporate Scarlett into things more, because she's just sort of like background noise. But I feel like together, you know, if you kind of let them be themselves, and maybe it's as a babyface, you know, they may naturally get over as babyfaces, but I think he'd have a shot. I just think that these characters he's been doing, I just kind of feel like it's a dead end. Alfonso, thank you for the 20. He says, hey, Solo, I have no power. Living in Houston, just having Hurricane Beryl. Is it Beryl or Beryl? I think it's Beryl. Sweep through southern Texas. I didn't have the chance to see Raw. Luckily, I have you through these tough times to keep me sane. Thank you for everything. Alfonso, and he sent this, it was like 2 hours ago, but Alfonso, I hope you are safe as can be. And I got you covered. So if you can't see the show, I brought you up to speed. But right now, you don't need to be worried about Monday Night Raw. You just need to worry about getting through that storm and coming out safely on the other side of it. Prince Vegeta says there's more sexual tension between Liv and Dom on TV than Rhea and Dom ever had, in my opinion. Rhea and Dom never even close to kissing or making out on TV. Yeah, but that's by design, because they didn't want them to. I'm going to tell you right now, if it ever gets to a point where Dominic and Rhea are going to kiss on TV, and they're like teasing a kiss, I mean, that video is going to do like record numbers for WWE. Like, it's going to absolutely just do insane social media numbers. Like, the number of people who have probably been waiting for that to happen since they first like got together is insane. So there's still a chance that it could happen. Hisco 95, happy Monday, Solo. Happy Monday to you as well. Based on that segment between Damian and Seth, do you think it's possible that Seth gets added to the World Heavyweight Championship match? Also, I'm glad Rhea is back and that they are teasing Punk against Rollins in the near future. Always a chance that Rollins could be added to the match, but I don't think so. Just because it wouldn't be fair to Gunther. He earned the shot. He earned the shot. Now, when he won King of the Ring, there was no rule saying it had to be one-on-one. But that would be like the winner of the Royal Rumble goes to the main event of WrestleMania to challenge for the world title of their choosing, and then it turns into a fatal four-way. You know, it's happened before, but boy, like, it's pretty unfair. You know, you win the Rumble, you have an expectation that it's you and one other person, and you're going to get your shot, and nobody else is going to interfere with that. So it is possible, and it would put a clear babyface in that match. Priest is sort of in between right now. Gunther's a heel. Rollins would be the big babyface in that match. So it's possible. But that's not what Priest told him tonight. Priest told him, when I beat Gunther, when I'm done with him, then I'm going to give you another shot. But I don't think we're going to see Rollins and Priest again, because by that point, Priest will no longer be the champion. And then we can get Rollins and Gunther straight up, one-on-one. El Masse with the $40 Super Chat drop. Cena was about to be fired in 2003, but Rock called Vince, told him that Cena has potential. Give him a white rapper gimmick and he is going to be a big star. Not as big as The Rock, of course, but decent enough. Well, of course. Of course. TEH says, Liv changed her profile picture to Dominic's face in her crotch. It's only going to make Rhea even more angry. I don't know why she would do that. She's asking for it now. To be fair, though, I mean, if I fell and my face ended up in Liv Morgan's crotch, I too would make that my profile photo. So I can't say that I blame her. NWO Matt, thank you for the learning tree. Start the learning trees. Drew did nothing wrong. Punk keeps screwing him out of the WWE title. Punk is the heel. Punk has always been the heel. You people just didn't believe me when I tried to tell you. LJ in VR. Strowman must run literally every single week. Yeah, it's like they're asking for trouble there. I mean, of all the people to have running on the show every week, I don't think that Braun Strowman is the one that should be getting his cardio in during Raw every week. Corey J. Barnett, wish I was Dom. He's got the job of a lifetime. He really does. Rodimus Prime, Liv Morgan, count your days. Mommy is back, and Dominic effed up big time. Jonathan Black, hey Solomonster, what were your thoughts on Sol Ruka versus Kehlani Jordan this past weekend? I saw Meltzer say he didn't think it was wrestling. You know what? It's no more or less wrestling than any other wrestling match you're going to see today. You know, you see it in WWE, you see it in AEW, where they have these spots that are... You see it in a lot of lucha matches. I just think it's up to your personal taste in wrestling, where you have these overly choreographed gymnastics type spots. Some people are just so freaking good at it that you watch it and it just makes you go, wow, you know, and you like it. And then sometimes you'll be watching it and I'll feel the same way watching it. Like, what are we doing here? You know, like, they're doing all these spots. They're trying to get in position for it. And now they're just standing there and they're waiting for the other person to do what they need to do. I feel like you just have to sort of accept it now because it's just part of wrestling in so many different places. But there are times where, and maybe it's just the experience level of the people involved, that they're just not that experienced at it. And making it look like they're in a real fight, then it's more noticeable. I understood what Meltzer's point was. I did see the match. I have said Sol Ruka is going to be a big star for them. Sol Ruka is a tremendous athlete. She's got a great look. I think she'll go far. She could stay healthy. I think she'll go far. Because she unfortunately is part of the ACL brigade, which is a growing brigade in WWE these days, especially NXT. But yeah, there were spots where it was like, all right, they're cooperating with each other, you know, in a way where you can't help but notice that they're cooperating with each other. And I look at that sometimes and I feel like, yeah, that's not really wrestling. But then they ended up having what I thought was a pretty good match. You know, it wasn't like it was the entire match. I felt like it was more it was more the beginning of the match. So I didn't really come away from it thinking it sucked or anything like that. But yeah, no, there were parts of it where it was like, eh, all right, they're doing a routine. You know, when Ricochet and Will Ospreay had that match years ago, what did everybody call it? What did I call it? It's the video game match. Right? It looked like they were in a video game. They're doing, like, video game spots. They're not wrestling. They're just showing off. They're not actually trying to, like, beat the other person. They're not in a fight. They're in a contest where when they're done doing what they're doing, when they're done with their routine, you expect to look over to the side and you're going to see people holding up signs that say 7, 10, 5. That's kind of what it feels like. So he's not totally wrong. Although, given the kind of wrestling that he likes, maybe not the best person to be making that comment. But he's not totally wrong. There's a reason why you hear the word spot fest. To see spot fest, you see them a lot in ladder matches. We had it in Money in the Bank. But you could have a really fun spot fest type match, right? Doesn't mean you can't enjoy it. But if you're going to have people doing a collection of just big spot, go right to the next one, big spot, go right to the next one, don't sell, not really telling any kind of story, that's what turns into a spot fest. Some people don't like that. Some people love it. I think part of it also is it depends how young you are. People who grew up watching wrestling in the last 10 years, they're going to think that that's what wrestling is. To them, that's what pro wrestling is. They don't have any concept of what wrestling looked like 25 years ago when people can do half the shit that these people do now. They couldn't do it. They couldn't physically do it back then. They weren't trained to do stuff like that. You know, or in some cases, they didn't have the physical skills to do stuff like that. They weren't gymnasts. You know, or maybe they didn't play a certain sport in college. Look at the people they're recruiting now. They're recruiting people from gymnastics, and they're recruiting people from different types of athletic backgrounds. These are the people they're going out and finding. So that's why they're so good at what they do. Is it wrestling? It's what you make of it. That's what it is. Sometimes I don't think it is. Casey is Raw. Have you heard about Hulk Hogan allegedly firing a brand ambassador for his Real American Beer Company for being black? Yeah, I saw a story about that. I don't know why he fired her. That's her story. Maybe it's true, maybe it's not. I don't know what his reasons were. I don't really give a fuck about his fucking beer, so I don't give a shit. But apparently that's her story. So whether that's the reason why she was allegedly fired, I have no idea. I'm not going to blame Hogan for it. I don't know all the details. Jerome Eugenio, new season of Unsolved Mysteries coming to Netflix July 31st. Very cool. Very cool. Won't really ever be the same, though, without Robert Stack coming on with that song. Alex with the $22 super chat. Brother Solo, with Cena's 2025 retirement tour approaching, can you see a scenario where his opponents are revealed as a surprise, similar to an open challenge, rather than the generic choreographed method? The generic choreographed method? You mean wrestling? Where you announce your opponent in advance? The way the business has been built for decades, so you can make money. We're not in the surprise business here. They're not throwing a surprise party every week. So, no, I don't think that all of his opponents should be revealed as surprises. So you mean to tell me that if he wrestles at WrestleMania, he's not going to know who his opponent is until he goes to the ring that night, like Seth Rollins at 38 when he didn't know Cody was coming out? You're not going to tell people who John Cena is wrestling at WrestleMania? Or at SummerSlam? I mean, that'd be pretty stupid now. Come on. So, no. I don't think so. Oh, look, it's our buddy Aldis Dick is back. Eli Cottonwood should be the next WWE champ. It's not Cottingwood, it's Cottonwood. If you're going to say it, at least get it right. Eli Cottonwood, who had to cut a promo once about his mustache. Josh Carlos, ranked these Austin 01 matches against Benoit and Y2J on Raw, Rock at WrestleMania 17, Triple H No Way Out, Angle at SummerSlam. The tag match with Benoit and Jericho is one of the greatest matches in Raw history. Rock and Austin at WrestleMania 17 is a legendary match. That probably should be in the number one spot. Number two, I'm putting the tag match on Raw. That's one of my personal favorites. Number three would be the No Way Out match, and number four would be SummerSlam, which was also great. Base Beerus, word, I swerve when I drive. I'll be swerving when I drive too. July 26th. NYC Arena, House of Glory, the AEW World Champion, Swerve Strickland and Prince Nana are coming back. They're swerving all the way to Queens. Stay off the Van Wick. Starboy Bebop, is it safe to say that at Punk affected both WrestleMania 30 and 40 main events for the better, especially after the possibility of a Cody injury angle? Yes. Yes. CM Punk walking out in 2014 is the reason why we got Daniel Bryan in the main event of WrestleMania 30. And it's his injury this year is the reason why we ended up with the situation playing out the way it did. So thank you, Punk. Everybody thanks CM Punk. Josh Carlos, more impactful and better heel turn, Hogan or Roman? Is this even really a question? Hogan. Why do people want to compare the Hogan heel turn to almost anyone else's heel turn? No. Hogan. I don't even think Roman turned heel. He just showed up one day as a heel. When did he turn? What did Roman do to turn heel? Explain that to me. He didn't do anything. He just showed up with Paul Heyman and veneers in his mouth, and he was a heel. That's it. And he could be whatever they wanted him to be because it was the Thunderdome, so they could pipe in whatever reaction they wanted. So they piped in boos because he was a heel. But he didn't do anything. Boots, Sammy needs Brett's steel plate. Yes, he does. He should wear the steel plate around his ribs. So the next time Braun Breaker goes for the spear, he knocks himself out. Rizzo, Lana was legit buried. That was infuriating. I'm glad the old man is long gone after that crap. Alex, I have no idea what you just said. Alex with the $23, with Wade Barrett seeming to involve himself in the Drew and Punk feud, can you see them revisiting the Nexus storyline if Wade does actually become a factor? No. And Wade Barrett is not wrestling. He's not going to be involved. Kevin Dunn's Beaver, Sol Ruka is my Pookie. That's what Al Bundy used to call Peg. She was his Pookie. Base Beerus, I see Eddie every time I see the mustache and the mullet. It's just unavoidable, isn't it? I mean, he really, now more than ever, with that hair and that mustache. And he does all of Eddie's moves. Does the shimmy, right? He does the Three Amigos. He does the frog splash. He is the spitting image of Eddie Guerrero. Hoffenheim says Liv, stretching the third leg of Dom. I think Dom will be stretching the third leg of Dom tonight in his hotel room. Antonio Taylor, thank you for the $12. Spartan Sprinkles, Carlito is a meat gazer. Antonio Taylor says, I forgot to add my message. Anyway, I think the CM Punk and Drew feud has been the best WWE has produced in years. Hard to argue. It's been great. They haven't even touched in an actual match yet. Nick Grosso says, if you noticed in the video, we saw Gacy, Loomis, Rowan unmasked, but not Nikki Cross. No, she was in the video. I'm almost positive I saw her in the video. David Thiering with the $50 Gunthar bomb. Not going to lie, Solo, you and I had the same thought when the Judgment Day walked in on Liv helping Dom stretch. I was getting flashbacks to when Steph walked in on Triple H and Trish's funny business as well. Rhea is going to be out for blood. That's why you got to drag it out. You got to make the people wait to get it. You know, you don't want to give that shit away. Nick Grosso with the $9.99. Where do you see the Judgment Day thing going? Rhea, Priest, Dom versus Balor, JD, Liv, or do Rhea and Priest part ways with the group and be huge babyfaces? I think Priest, I don't know about Priest being a huge babyface. Rhea is already a huge babyface. But yeah, I think they're going to part ways and end up going babyface. Bleed Boston, Rhea should become the sixth member of the Wyatt Six and start dating Bo Dallas to get back at Liv Morgan. Won't happen, but that would be pretty funny. It would be if Liv Morgan and Bo Dallas were still dating, which I don't believe they are, so I don't think she cares. Hoffenheim, does the learning tree suck that bad? I don't watch AEW. Yeah, it's just not good TV. DEH Sires, after a heat wave, I need those NXT producers to get called up to the main roster. Those main roster producers are getting lazier. Did you watch the show? I watched parts of the show. I didn't watch the entire show. Hoffenheim, we need a 304 title on every pre-show. Chris Mikesell, what was a better tournament final title match to introduce a new title? European title, Owen versus Davey Boy, or U.S. title, Eddie versus Benoit? Owen against Davey. I think that was in Frankfurt, Germany, I believe, on Raw. Sean D with the learning tree. I'll tell you why they're doing belly-to-bellies to one another, because the WWE is now filled with All Japan nerds and are now competing to see who can take the hardest bump to the head like Kenta used to. I am going to go out on a limb here and say that Chad Gable is not an All Japan nerd. He does do a lot of suplexes, though, because that's what he does. He's like a little mini Kurt Angle. And I really wish they would stop doing that on the floor. NWO Matt. So, like Eddie versus Rey, battle for Dom. Can we get Liv against Rhea, battle for custody of Dom? I don't know. Based on the way Rhea was acting, I don't think she wants custody of Dom. Justin G, this can only end one way. Judgment Day Court. Uffman Entertainment. Vince Russo special. Dom turns on Rhea and joins up with Liv. You know, they've done a good enough job with this that I don't even know that that would necessarily be a Russo special at this point. A Russo special would be like a turn just for the sake of doing it, and it makes absolutely no sense. In this case, you could understand it if Dom were to turn. I mean, he's finally fallen for Liv after weeks of pursuit. Maybe he has, you know, all the times he's fallen on top of this woman, his face buried in her crotch. All of the things that have happened between them, I could imagine a scenario where he falls for this woman. Barry says, there's a message in my Cheerios. It says, oh. It's like somebody needs to buy some alphabet syrup. Now you could spell out your own words. BlissFan says, Bo and Liv are still together as far as I know. Okay. Word on the internet, which is always so reliable, was that they weren't, but I haven't bothered to investigate because I don't give a shit. But if BlissFan says it, then it must be true. Because I know BlissFan I know is on top of this stuff. When it comes to anything Wyatt-related, I know BlissFan's got the scoop. So maybe you can look into that for us. Rizzo says, this is my reaction if I hear someone say, it's the learning tree. Thanks, guys. In public now, thanks to these streams. You should end every conversation you have in your daily life with, thanks, guys. Like, let your voice get really high-pitched. Like somebody kicked you in the nuts and said, thanks, guys. And then just walk away. David with the 15. I'm curious as well if Rhea Ripley is in fact medically cleared. Any chance that if she is, do you think for SummerSlam we get Liv against Rhea for the title with Dom as special guest referee? If Dom is going to be involved, that would be the obvious role for him. I just don't know how you get to that. Like, who decides that he should be the referee? Well, yeah, I guess Liv could make the recommendation. Yeah. You know what? I think a referee spot actually makes a lot of sense. I think so. With both women thinking that, you know, they've got Dom in their corner on their side. What's he going to do? Who's he going to count the winning fall for? James Jackson. Live against Rhea, Hell in a Cell at Bad Blood. No. Drew and Punk. Hell in a Cell of Bad Blood. It's the only way. The learning sicko, Dr. Bropio, give Cross a TikTok gimmick. Thanks, guys. We already tried the TikTok gimmick. It didn't work. DEH, Liv changed her profile picture to Dom's face and her crotch. I mentioned that already. We've got Base Beerus. Now, I love the fact that he wrote BS for buy or sell, but I just read that as BS, and then I saw Hogan, and I said yes. Buy or sell, Hogan knows best or Total Divas / Total Bellas? I'm going to sell on both. I don't watch that reality TV crap. There's nothing reality about it. It's garbage. Garbage. I don't watch it. I don't understand it. I have friends, my own brother, like they're fans of all these weird shows like Below Deck. And why do you watch this shit? Like, wrong with you? You know what I like to watch? Like with lunch sometimes, I'll sit down during the day, I'll fix myself some lunch. All these people watching their reality shows with all these young people, all these hot women, all this stuff. You know what I'm watching? I'm watching Pluto TV. I'm watching episodes of Matlock. And I'm not talking about this new Matlock that CBS has with Kathy Bates as Matlock. I'm talking like Matlock, the original. Like the show my grandmother would watch when I was younger. And now I find myself sitting here watching random episodes of Matlock. Real television. Not this reality TV garbage. D.H. Sires, Fightful reported, Jordan is a free agent in January of 2025. That being Jordan Grace. Yeah, well, I think that was the belief, is that her contract was going to be up in 2020. She's WWE bound, please. I've known that for a while. Not with any personal knowledge, just you read the tea leaves. It's not hard to see. WWE is going to get her, and she's going to be a big star for them. You know, funny enough, I was never really a Murder, She Wrote guy. Well, I wasn't really in the age group for it. But even now, like, I'm not a Murder, She Wrote guy or Columbo. I would watch Columbo. I did watch Columbo when I was younger with Peter Falk. But now I'm a Matlock guy. And you should be too. Jarrett Rodriguez. Every time I look at WWE's Instagram comments, I die inside. Just bad take after bad take. You've educated me on the marks of the past with the RSPW Rewind segment, but in your opinion, which is worse, my generation or yours? Oh, your generation is far worse. Far worse. I mean, there were some sickos and dum-dums in mine too, but I just think it's as bad as it's ever been now, as far as that goes. Oofman Entertainment, at the end of the day, it's like Russo once said, it's just wrestling, bro. It's just wrestling. The Juliet, Jordynne Grace revealed in an interview that her TNA contract expires in January. Also, rest in peace, Cartoon Network. Is it truly dead or dying? I mean, people have written off Cartoon Network before and it's still around, so I don't know if that's a legitimate thing or not. I feel like it's been dead for a while, no? Alex with the 10 spot says, if Cody did not leave in 2016, where do you think his position would be in WWE right now? Also, if AEW creates a Hall of Fame and decides to put him in it, do you think WWE will allow him to go? No. No, they're not going to do business with Tony Khan. And as far as where he would be right now, had he stayed, he had to leave in order to get to where he is. So it's hard for me to know for sure. If Vince wanted him in that Stardust gimmick for another year, 2 years, 3 years, it was a dead end. He wouldn't be the champion right now, I could promise you that. I don't think he'd be champion now. No way. Base Beer as HBK also believed in Swerve. He did, more so than Triple H did. That HBK, man, he's got a good eye. One goes this way, the other one goes that way. DEH says Game Show NXT was a guilty pleasure. Funny show. Devin from New Jersey says, even though Cena isn't Solo's GOAT, would he be in my top 10? No. Brandon Vasquez, how do you think Cena's career plays out if Brock Lesnar never left in 2004 after WrestleMania 20? Does he still become the top guy or near the top? Yes. Yes, he does. I think with his ability, the charisma, the natural charisma that he had and his promo skills would have, more than his in-ring skills, would have carried him far no matter what. It might have taken a little bit longer. He may not have been the face of the company for as long, but I think Cena still would have become one of their bigger stars. Jarrett says, oh, and I forgot to ask, what are your overall thoughts on Javon Evans? He's a great athlete. He's very impressive, especially at his age. I think he's only 20. He's very gifted athletically. Base Beer says, Dom and Liv, pure soap opera, just how we like it. Why, they say wrestling is like a male soap opera. Oofman Entertainment, Liv said in an interview back in May that she is single, so keep your DMs open. And Boney, is Jordynne Grace and Joe Hendry TNA's only star? It feels like it, right? No, they have other stars. I mean, they have Mustafa Ali, and they have Nick Nemeth, and they have Moose, and they have Josh Alexander, and they have Speedball Mike Bailey. Trying to think on the women's side. They have Jordynne Grace. Who else? Who would be like their number two, though, on the women's side? Is Mickie James still active there? I don't know. But Jordynne and Joe Hendry are kind of their big names right now that WWE is trying to utilize and take advantage of. They're kind of the main ones. I guess they don't want Speedball. They want Joe Hendry. Because Joe Hendry, he's the talk of the town right now. Oh, Jake Something, that's right. Yeah, no, Jake Something is really good. Yeah, we brought him into House of Glory last year, and he's very good. He's very good. Masha Slamovich. Yeah, she's great too. Ash by Elegant. Oh, TK Banks says that's terrible. Says trash by Elegance. Have they changed her name and I didn't know about it? Thunder Force, whatever show WWE does for John Cena's retirement, would you agree that WWE has to have it in Boston? I do not agree with that. And in fact, I am wondering, because every year WWE has a post-Christmas show in Madison Square Garden on December 26th. And so I wonder if maybe they turn that into a like a Peacock event and his final show is at Madison Square Garden. Wouldn't that be a great place for it? Just because he's from West Newbury doesn't mean that he has to retire in Boston. I think MSG would be a fine place for it. I mean, if he's going January through December, then why not? Why not do it at the Garden? Turn it into a big special. Maybe it could be a live Netflix special, if not on Peacock. A live Netflix event. John Cena, the final match, live from Madison Square Garden. How John Cena saved Christmas? Sure. Thank you for the likes. We are currently sitting at 618 and counting. We are getting close to 650. That's what I like to see. That's a big night right there, and that means that we are going to be the Booker.
Ladies and gentlemen, it is now time to be the Booker.
Yeah, you know, Snow Dog, I agree with you, Snow Dog, and I was going to say the same thing. If I had one knock on Javon Evans, and it's less of a knock now, he's still so young. He's way too skinny. He's got to put some meat on those bones. So as he matures and gets older and trains, he's got to get a little bit bigger. If he can do that, he's got all the athletic gifts in the world, I think, to be a big star. But yeah, he's like rail thin. So his ceiling is only going to go so high if he's looking like that. All right, tag team, be the Booker. Here we go. We kick things off here with the teams. We got the teams here in Be the Booker. And we went to the completely wrong slide. We went to the Sound Off Gamer slide.
Time to be because the Booker.
I hit the wrong button. I don't know where I went. But we're back. We're back now for tag team, be the Booker. There we go. We won't do that again. We begin with the Midnight Express. Beautiful Bobby and Dennis Condrey. And look who's in the middle there. Jim Cornette, a young Jim Cornette. And here you thought we were going to lapse into a game of 2K24. Not tonight, we're not. We're live, pal. All right, the Midnights. The Midnights. Going to be taken on. Huh. How do I feel about this? Faces of Fear and the Midnight Express. You know what? Don't beat me up, Haku, but that's not a winner for me. That's not a winner for you. You can bell it all you want to. It's my promotion. I don't give a shit what you would do. It's what I would do. And I don't know. I don't like that match. I don't like that match. I don't know why. I just don't like that match. All right, women's be the Booker. Let's see what we got here. Women's Be the Booker, we begin with Willow Nightingale, former TBS champion. She is going to the finals of the Owen this week against Mariah May in Calgary. Big fan of Willow Nightingale. Willow Nightingale. There we go. Is one of, if I had to say who my favorites are right now in wrestling, among the women, Willow Nightingale's on that list. I think she's great. And she's going to be stepping into the ring with timeless Toni Storm. There you go. We got ourselves an AEW match here in Be the Booker. We've got Toni Storm and Willow Nightingale. Willow has been beaten down with a metal object. Willow. All right, men's Be the Booker. Let's do it. It is the former AEW World Heavyweight Champion, Samoa, or as Justin Roberts says it, Samoa. Doesn't that bug the shit out of you? Samoa Joe. He didn't have it for that long, but I was a fan of Samoa Joe, the AEW World Champion. I thought he carried that belt well. And let's see who Samoa Joe is going to be defending that AEW World Heavyweight Championship against. It will be against the former IWGP World Heavyweight Champion, Sonata. Now, Sonata has fallen from grace. He's no longer the IWGP champion. He's no longer really in the top mix. But I think he gets unfairly maligned as champion. I like Sonata. 2 out of 3 is our score for Be the Booker tonight. Not the best, but we've had worse. Darth Panic, could there ever be a partnership between WWE and House of Glory? Never say never. Never say never. We had the WWE Women's Champion make a stop at the NYC Arena in the last couple of weeks. You saw the video online. We had the WWE Women's Champion and AEW TBS Champion with their titles in the same place at the same time, under the same roof. And it was a House of Glory roof. I'm just saying. That's HOG. You never know what you're going to get. You never know what plans are in the pipeline or who might show up. You never know. Ty Woodsworld with the $4.99. Has anyone ever thought that Liv actually saving Dom, quote unquote, from Rhea, that he's saving her from Rhea, or that she's saving him from Rhea? Stockholm syndrome from Rhea to Dominic, something to think about. Nobody has thought that because that's not what's happening here. This woman has literally been telling us for months that she is on her revenge tour. And that's all that this is about. It is about revenge. It is about revenge and nothing more. It's not that deep. Dirty Liv Morgan and Dirty Dom. Thank you guys for all of the great super chats. Some good questions in there. And thank you also for the 600 plus likes. That is awesome here for a Monday night. Going to be live with you again on Wednesday night after Dynamite goes off the air. Dynamite's a big one this week because we have the finals of the men's and women's Owen Hart tournaments. We have Hangman Adam Page against Bryan Danielson, and we have Willow Nightingale against Mariah May. So both of those matches are taking place. Swerve Strickland is back on the show. Will Ospreay will respond to MJF. That is going to be a good night of wrestling. Of course, I'll be live with JD on TNT tomorrow night over on his channel. So a lot of stuff coming up. If you missed episode 869 of The Sound Off, again, make sure you check it out. My full review is on there for the WrestleMania 40 Behind the Curtain documentary. An honest review on what I thought of The Rock and Roman Reigns and Cody Rhodes and Seth Rollins. Mostly The Rock, let's be honest. It was mostly about, it was about The Rock. It was basically The Rock's documentary. Hey, Boots. Look at Boots. Hey, look at Bass Beerus. Holy shit. Bass Beerus just gifted 5 channel memberships. Thank you, brother. Boots says, ever noticed that modern-day Stevie Richards looks like Adam Cole, but older? Also, your thoughts on Ethan Page becoming the NXT champion. Good for him. He's been there 6 weeks. He's already won their world title. I don't think he's going to have it for that long, but he seems to have adapted very well, as I said he would. From the moment he made that first appearance, I said, he's going to do just fine. He's going to fit in perfectly fine in NXT. I thought that it was the best place for him because he could be a big fish in a relatively small pond. Yeah, you send him to the main roster and he'll, you know, I don't know that they're really going to have anything for him right now, anything meaningful. NXT really feels like it's the right place for him to ply his craft and show people what he can do. And then hopefully at some point he will get a shot on the main roster. But right now, I think he's got a good thing going, and I'm happy for him. And he clearly is a lot happier now than he was then, as he should be. Eminem, what a night of surprises, and the fun has only begun. Can't wait for TNT tomorrow, Dynamite Wednesday, SmackDown Friday. Can't forget Shark Week. That's right, it is this week, right? This week is Shark Week. And Bass Beerus says, who's one of your favorite stand-up comics? George Carlin is, he's the GOAT. Carlin is the GOAT. And that Jerry Seinfeld guy was pretty good too, back when he was doing stand-up. I guess he still does stand-up, but in his earlier days. I mean, I heard it even got him a television show. We've got Power Spying Games with a super chat. Says, who's the most underrated looking woman in wrestling, past or present? And, you know, I see a lot of people mentioning Luna in the comments. And I think if you've ever seen Luna, and I've seen Luna without the makeup on. And she's a pretty woman. But that's not what her gimmick was. And so she had the half-shaved head and the tattoos, and the scratchy kind of, you know, evil-sounding voice. And it just, you know, people didn't look at her like, oh, what an attractive woman, because she wasn't trying to be attractive. But I don't think she gets enough credit for being, a beautiful lady. A beautiful soul, who unfortunately was taken from the wrestling world far too soon. You know who else is actually a very pretty woman, and you would never know it based on the makeup job when she comes out, is Abaddon. Ever seen Abaddon without the makeup on? You would never recognize her. You would never recognize her. She destroyed her voice for the business. So did Savage. I think Randy Savage fell doing that voice for 30 years. I did it for Halloween one night, and I wanted to die. What a mistake that was, especially for somebody who does a podcast. What the hell was I thinking? Never again. Uffman, wow. Also, following suit and gifting 5 channel memberships. Give it up for Uffman. Fallen Footwear is one of our new channel members now. Thank you very much, guys. Bass Beerus, not one to be outdone, says, the hell with Uffman. He's going to gift another 5. And so now we have five more, including Dooley and Gary. And Oasis 793, welcome to the channel. I love the sea of green that we have. If this was Sesame Street, the color of the day would be the color green. That's what I'm seeing right now in the chat. Sherry, yeah, of course. Sensational Sherry. But I think a lot of people did look at Sherry and a lot of people had the hots for Sherry. You know, she may not have been the pretty blonde, you know, that they were always so fond of, but Sherry was a looker. Sometimes she would also wear some like wacky makeup on her face and stuff, but no, I think a lot of people like Sherry. And Uffman comes right back and says, anything you can do, I can do better. Five more gifted channel memberships, including Ray and Lead Plant and Schwartzy. May the Schwartz be with you. Welcome, Schwartzy. Crystal Marshall was underrated. What are you kidding me? Crystal Marshall was fucking gorgeous. Underrated. She doesn't get talked about because she wasn't in it for very long. I thought she was gorgeous. Hey, Edward Brooks, welcome to the channel. It's good to have you. Daphne, Daphne's a good one. What is Tori doing these days? I think she's doing yoga. I don't know if she's like a yoga teacher. I don't know. Something like that. Spaceballs 2 is in the works. I did hear that, yes. Spaceballs is an absolute classic. The diner scene, the space diner scene, just it's cinema. Where they spoof the scene from Alien. I don't even want to give away the real like cool part about that scene to people who still haven't seen the original Spaceballs. But if you've seen Alien and you've seen Star Wars, then you would enjoy Spaceballs. It's basically one big spoof, mostly on Star Wars, but it's like a real big spoof on those movies. But well done. A well done one. Right. So instead of Jabba the Hutt, you had Pizza the Hut. Mel Brooks is a genius. He really is. I did see the new Beverly Hills Cop movie. Beverly Hills Cop, Axel F. dropped on Netflix on Wednesday. And I watched it, and I enjoyed it. It's not as good as the first and the second one. It's probably better than the third one. The third one I haven't seen, though, in so long. I know a lot of people are not fond of the third one. But I enjoyed it. I enjoyed all the cameos in it. I just think it's cool that they were able to get most of the original people back. You know, they got Paul Reiser in it, Judge Reinhold, and the old guy, the other cop, Taggart. You know, he plays Taggart. Bronson Pinchot. Balky. He's in there, too. Very cool. Although a little depressing that you see, like, the old guy and some of these guys, that they're still working. It's like, shouldn't you be enjoying your retirement? Why are they still working? Did I watch MacGyver? Yes, I was a big MacGyver fan as a kid. Not this new fucking MacGyver they came out with a few years ago. I know there was, like, a rebooted version. Fuck that shit. Richard Dean Anderson, baby. The original MacGyver. That was my jam when I was younger. And that theme song, too. A great theme song. Nothing can hold a candle to the 80s theme songs for television shows and sitcoms and dramas. Yeah, I was a big MacGyver guy. Hunter with Fred Dreyer. Which was like, you know, basically like a knockoff Dirty Harry. But love that show. Only recently discovered the show Wise Guy. Did not even know this show existed. I saw it on Peacock. I'm like, what is this? And because it was a Stephen J. Cannell show. Cannell was the one who, you know, created the A-Team and Hunter. And it was a late 80s show. It only went about four seasons, and I didn't even know it existed. And I started watching that, and I'm really enjoying it. So that's... I still can't believe I didn't even know that show existed. Knight Rider, yeah. Throw them at me. You're bringing back a flood of memories here. Yep, Knight Rider was another one. I was not a Rockford Files guy, no. No, I didn't watch Rockford Files. Did anybody watch Wise Guy? Am I the only one who's like even aware of this show? One of the main characters is played by Jonathan Banks, who is actually one of the villains in the original Beverly Hills Cop, but you would know him better maybe as Mike from Breaking Bad. He was in Wise Guy. Thundercats, of course. CSI New York. Nah, I don't watch any of that. I didn't watch NYPD Blue either. I don't know. Should I watch that? I never watched any of them. Married with Children, of course. Married with Children is goated. Al Bundy is goated. The promo battles with him and Marcy are just legendary. What makes it even better is knowing now that the actors who played Marcy and Al, they genuinely did not like each other. So it's kind of made it better knowing that. You know, it's funny, just to go back to what you guys were saying before about like women's wrestlers who didn't get enough credit for being, you know, beautiful or known for their looks. It's still wild to me how on that show, you know, Al is always making fun of his wife and insulting her, and it's almost like he's being punished by being married to her. But Katie Sagal, and she had that the big, you know, like beehive hair for a while, but she had like the red hair and everything. She's actually, I mean, she was a beautiful woman. So it was kind of weird that he would like act that way when he had this beautiful woman at home that he was married to. And like, if you've seen Katie Sagal, even like now, like in recent years, she's still a knockout. Like, she still looks great. Yeah, he definitely outkicked his coverage in terms of who he married on that show. But still, I think one of the greatest lines of all the lines on that show, there were so many great insults and one-liners, and I mean, you couldn't have a show like this today because, you know, can't be funny. But she walks in, she came from like the store or wherever she is. She walks in the front door and he's sitting in the kitchen eating and she's like, "Hi, Al, did you miss me?" And he goes, "With every bullet so far." Just like the way he delivered it. It was just so perfect. The writers on that show were fantastic. Like, the stuff they would come up with. Oh, it was so great. Like, I would laugh so hard, my ribs would hurt. That's how funny it was. Oh, man. But imagine, like, signing up to be on that show. Because, I mean, if you watch the show, you know the story there. You know, he worked in a shoe store. And he complained about all the fat women who would walk into the store every day, right? He was brutal, but they were funny. And like, but these women, they took these roles knowing, like, I don't know how they put the casting call out for it. Like, you know, heavy set woman for a role where she gets degraded and insulted. I don't know how they even put the casting call out for it. Yeah, obviously they were okay with it, but man, I mean, some of the jabs are just, they're so biting. But again, the writers would just have a way with words and the stuff they would come up with. There was one, oh God, there was a woman and he insulted her in some way, and she was like, "You'll be hearing from my attorney." And he says, "Will that be from the law offices of Hagen and Dawes?" Like, how do they come up with this? Like, it's just, it's so great. And then for the longest time, there was an episode where he ends up at the unemployment office. And I thought the woman, the female actor in the scene was the Snapple lady, but I don't think it was. I think it was a different actor or actress. But he's sitting there. He's sitting in the unemployment office. And like the first shot of the scene is of her nameplate on the desk, and it says Ms. Blaub. And like, I already know that this is going to a very bad place. And they pan out, and he's sitting there. And of course, yeah, she's a heavier woman, and she's sitting there. Like, the audience is laughing before, like, a single word is said. And then he has to, like, say her name. He has to, like, say her name. And he goes, "And so, Ms. Blaub." And I'm just like, I'm dying. And she says, "Ms. Blaub." And he says, "Oh yes, I'm sorry that I'm sorry your name was partially obscured by some errant flesh." And then she, you know, they're insulting each other back and forth, and she goes, "Yeah, do you have any skills whatsoever?" And he says, "Well, I'm naturally inquisitive." He goes, "For instance, I'm wondering just how strong that chair is that you're sitting in right now." But she was going back and forth with him, like. Every insult, like, she was giving it right back to him. Like, that's funny, you know? Like, that's comedy. And people could laugh at each other. Can't do that anymore. Yeah. Oh, man. Then remember the whole no man thing. It was, there were so many memorable ones. Oh, man. And Jefferson, yeah, oh, yeah, the actor, I mean, again, the actors they got for the show, they're all great. Ted McGinley, Christina Applegate, David Faustino, the guy who played Griff, the guy who played Officer Dan, the guy who played, Bob Rooney, all of them. All of them were great. Psycho Dad. I forgot about Psycho Dad. Remember the opening song for Psycho Dad? There were a few different versions of it. I could still hear it. I could hear the jingle in my head. Killed his wife because she had a cold. Might as well, she was getting old. Psycho Dad. And you would just sit there going like, Psycho Dad. We got to get a Psycho Dad super chat. That's what we need. At the nudie bar. Oh my God. Now I want to go on a Married with Children kick now. Oh, we could be here all night. I'm going to let you guys go. This has been fun. Holy shit. I didn't realize it's 2:00 in the morning. Jesus. Thank you guys for all the super chats tonight. Thank you for all the likes. Thank you for all the love. I think we had a good review going through all the key parts of the show. Good Raw. Hopefully we'll have a good Dynamite on Wednesday. Again, if you missed episode 830 or 869, Jesus, I got to go to sleep. 869 of the Sound Off. I'm shaving off Sound Offs now. Go check it out. We're back in the top 10 I saw earlier. I think we're at number 10 in the top 10 wrestling podcast on all of Apple. So when you go and you stream from there and leave a comment and a review, you can help us work our way back up the charts. So that's always cool. Be well. Stay safe. Have yourselves a great rest of your night. Go listen to some Psycho Dad. Seriously, go type in Psycho Dad here on YouTube when you're done here. If you've never heard the jingle before, it literally was just like he'd be watching TV and you would just hear the opening song. That's really all it was. So there were like a couple of versions of it. So go listen to some of that before you go to bed. All right, I'll see you guys Wednesday night. Take care, guys.